You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's show, I'm blessed to be joined by a certain major market radio host. I think you know him more as Matt Thomas. Of course, he has a daily talk show over at Sports Talk 790. But within the Rockets community, I think you guys know him more from the Rockets home PA gig. And he's also the road play-by-play announcer when the Rockets are away from Toyota Center. So Matt's a very busy guy, but I'm thrilled to be joined by him for a few minutes today. Matt, how's it going, buddy?
Ben, it has been too long since I've been on this podcast. Actually, this is my first ever. I'm losing my virginity on Locked On Rockets.
There you go. Yeah, we had to because, you know, we had the Sports MT blessing last week with Craig Ackerman without Sports MT actually being on the show, which did not feel right. I don't know if you actually can have a Sports MT blessing without you being on. So,
well, now your podcast members will skyrocket because when I mention it once, it will be... You'll be able to get major advertisers. You'll be able to quit your other jobs. You'll just be able to focus exclusively on this podcast.
There you go. Well, I appreciate that, sir. We'll start with the obvious. This homestand, they just finished off 4-0. Are you relieved at all to know that there is no Matt Thomas PA jinx? Because until a week ago, this was a team that was 9-1 on the road, looked dominant when you were the road play-by-play announcer. But when they were at home... For whatever reason, 4-3, they were fairly pedestrian. Now, finally, you're seeing the home performance match the road performance. But is there any relief that Matt Thomas, PA guy, is not somehow jinxing this team?
No, you know, I've always felt confident that wherever my voice is heard, good things will happen. no, just kidding. But it was kind of interesting that the team had played so well on the road. And a lot of it is because I just think, if you go back to last season, Ben, the Rockets, with Mike and running the team for the first time. I think we were on the road 15 of the first 21 games. It was one of those obnoxious numbers. It's always been a good road team.
Yep.
Not to say the Toyota Center is not a good home venue, but they're just very comfortable on the road. And sometimes you try to figure out why that is. Maybe the competition was more difficult, but that really wasn't the case. I mean, I'm thinking about the best teams that have been in so far probably would be Philadelphia and Toronto. Those are not bad losses. Now that you look at it and how those two teams have turned out, Memphis was obviously a team that you were disappointed when you gave up the lead late in the fourth quarter. I think they scored 20 of the final 22 points in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a different Memphis team that the Rockets saw in that early season than what they are now, obviously, with all the injuries and the firing of David Fizdale. So I don't think there's any logic to it except that they got home, they took on second-tier competition, and they took care of business. And so... The sum of the parts is it's a 17-4 basketball team that has, I don't want to say surprising because we knew they'd be good. I just didn't think we'd be this good at this point, you know, not a quarter part of the season underway.
Right, and that leads into my next question because we're chatting midday Thursday. They're not playing again until late Sunday night. So essentially you have 4 days off without basketball. And as of last night, you just passed the quarter point of the NBA season, 17-4. That means you're 21 games in. So... It's a good time to reflect. Where are they at? I mean, it sounds like they're ahead of even your schedule. I know you were an optimistic guy in them going into the year, but 17-4, you're looking now at a squad that's on a pace to win mid to upper 60s, and at the moment has a two-game lead with the tiebreaker on the Golden State Warriors. I mean, are they even exceeding what you expected from them, say, 6 weeks ago?
I don't know if I would have said 17-4, but I would also be honest and tell you that I thought they would get off to a fast start. A lot of it is because, I mean, let's be brutally honest here, the meaty part of the schedule, the two more Golden States, four San Antonio games, some of the upper echelon teams in the NBA, no Minnesota games, all that stuff's going to happen in the next handful of weeks. A lot of Eastern Conference teams, a lot of middle-of-the-pack teams in the NBA when you add the West and East together. And the mark of what I like about any basketball team, especially a team that I cover and watch and now work for, is I like to eliminate the unnecessary, I can't believe you lost type of games. And let's go back a couple of years ago, Ben. That's what I think how Kevin McHale lost the job in larger part is that, remember those three games early in the year when they all had those 20-point leads and blew them and lost to some of the second, third-tier teams in the NBA? If you get rid of those types of games, you're going to be able to sustain a pretty good season. You go 500 against the elite teams, you play 750 ball against, you know, the second-tier squad, and you're going to be comfortably between, you know, 52 and 57 wins. So I really, and I mentioned this on my radio show the last couple of days, they have four losses, and there's not one that you go, oh, my goodness, how horrible of a loss was that? You know, they take care of Indiana. They beat up on the Charlottes of the world. The Philadelphia games, obviously, were, one was a nail-biter to win at the buzzer by Eric Gordon. The other one was a loss. But, you know, that's going to be one of the better teams they've faced. They've knocked off Cleveland. You know, beating the Golden State game to open up the season was no small feat, especially when the Knights with the rings were being given out. So, you know, the thing I like about it is there are no shake-your-head losses so far. And we're sitting here approaching December. That's a pretty good sign when you don't have one of those nights where you go, man, James just didn't have it, or Eric was shooting terrible, or Ryan Anderson couldn't buy a basket. And so that's been kind of nice that somebody every single night, and largely it's been James, has been able to overcome a night where you may not be shooting your best. Like, for instance, the game against, you know, last night against Indiana. I mean, it wasn't a pleasant game. The third quarter was obviously a lot of fun, but it was very pedestrian for most of it. And that's what kind of happens when you're taking on an Eastern Conference team like Indiana. But give the Rockets credit for coming out fast and furious in the third and kind of putting things away. And I remember looking up at the scoreboard early fourth quarter last night going, I can't believe it. It's a 15-17 point lead. And this didn't feel like that last night. That just shows you how excellent overall basketball and consistently good they have been this season.
Right. The professionalism, I would say, is a really encouraging sign in that it's not just that they've beaten these teams. A lot of them, their first quarter scoring margin has been tremendous, which shows you that they've been ready from the jump. And so I think that's a sign of a mature team, a locked-in team that, you know, with maybe the Knicks game is the one exception. Certainly they were not ready from the jump against the Knicks on Saturday. But other than that, they have not really had any lapses where you look at them and say, well, they took the night off. I thought Matt Bullard made an interesting point on, I heard him on Adam Clanton's show yesterday on 790, that, you know, this is the first year the Rockets have all but eliminated shoot-arounds to where these guys, they're not waking up at 9 a.m. to drive in for just to kind of dilly-dally around at, you know, 10 a.m., whatever it is, to shoot the ball for 30 minutes. And, of course, he's making the sleep argument. You let these guys sleep for 8, 9, 10 hours, whatever it may be, consecutively. Do you think that that's a, you know, a factor in this at all? Because it certainly seems like their level of dominance from the beginning of games is better than it's been in years past.
Well, I'll say, you know, the shoot-around thing is interesting because every time I ask coaches about shoot-around, they kind of hem and haw, and it's kind of like, you know, well, that's what we did back in the day.
Right.
Or that's what teams do. I would say this, that probably for young basketball teams, you know, you need shoot-arounds just to keep them focused, give them a chance to shoot, you know, look at the film a little bit, get some shots, and kind of just, you know, and I'm not saying babysit, but just make sure that everybody's keyed in on it. This is not a basketball team that would have that. I mean, look at your rotation. I mean, the only baby in the bunch, and that's really being maybe a little generous, is Clint Capella. I mean, these are guys that are 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years in the NBA. They know exactly what they have to do. And I don't think Mike D'Antoni would do this. I don't think most coaches would do this with a young basketball team. I don't think Philadelphia is skipping a whole lot of shoot-arounds or some of the other younger teams. But a team like the Rockets that, frankly, you know, just don't get a whole lot of practice time to begin with. So what they've decided to do is they decided to go a little bit harder during practice days. In fact, we're going to California next week, and obviously to finish up in Portland, which will be a week from Saturday. We're going to stay in Portland Saturday night. They're going to practice the day after the game in Portland and then fly home, where you would typically just jump on a plane and come home.
Right.
That's the philosophy of, let's practice, let's do it the right way, so we get back to Houston, play the next night at home, which I think is against New Orleans on the 11th, and get the guys the proper rest. So it's just a different strategy, and again, I think it comes down to, it's Chris Paul, it's James Harden, it's Trevor Ariza, it's Nene. We're not talking about, you know, 23-year-olds, 24-year-olds that are just getting acclimated to life in the NBA. This is a group of been-there-done-that kind of guys.
Good point. We're on the phone now with Matt Thomas, Rockets PA guy at home, road radio play-by-play announcer, also a daily talk show host over at Sports Talk 790 here in Houston. Got him for a few more minutes here as we chat on this midday Thursday. Matt, I'm curious, you mentioned earlier the schedule, which to this point has been somewhat favorable to the Rockets. They have had an inordinate amount of road games, but generally they have not been through murderer's row. You had the one game against Golden State, none against San Antonio, none against Oklahoma City, although maybe we're getting to a point where you don't consider Oklahoma City in that upper echelon anymore. We'll have to wait and see. 8-12 certainly does not seem to bode well. But I guess the argument, the other side, is that, you know, if you're trying to say right now, which they are on pace to be a mid to upper 60s win team, the argument against it is simply the schedule, that as they play tougher teams, they're going to suffer more losses. The argument in favor of their level of play is you can say, hey, they're on this mid to upper 60s win pace, and they have not even had Chris Paul for the majority of their basketball games. Yep. So basically, whatever you lose by virtue of going to a tougher schedule, maybe you gain that just through the efficiency of having Chris Paul out there for 30-plus minutes a game. So I'm curious your take on that, and also just what you've seen from Chris on this homestand, because this homestand has really been the first time that we've seen Chris both A, healthy, and B, in a 30-plus minutes per game starting role.
The thing I've noticed about Chris, honestly, Ben, is I think he's, and I don't think he's lacking of confidence in his shot, but I think especially last night's game, I think there were three or four times where he would have normally taken a shot that he didn't take. I don't know if he feels like his stroke is all that spectacular at this point. The scoring numbers are, you know, obviously last night everybody getting double digits that helped the cause. But this is one of those situations that I think he doesn't have to feel like the weight of the world is on his shoulders, that if he doesn't feel like the shot's there, he'll be able to have that great court vision like he has to find somebody else that has the better shot that maybe is feeling a little more confident. So if there's anything that I want to see maybe Chris do in the next handful of weeks is maybe gain that confidence back a little bit more. And I don't know if he'd ever admit that or not, but I just felt like last night in particular there were two or three opportunities where there were some open shots he didn't take. And that's just a smart veteran player. I've seen Eric Gordon do that a couple of times. I've seen that with Trevor Ariza. You know, three-point shooters, all the greats will go through slumps. Yeah, all the great shooters will go through them. And I think Chris right now, it's probably feeling that, you know, I'm starting to get my minutes up a little bit. I want to make sure I pace myself properly. I want to get everybody involved. I want to make sure James is still getting his looks. And so from that perspective, I can't wait to see the next stage of development in Chris's game as a Rocket. But so far, since coming back from the injury, I feel like he's got eyes in the back of his head. He just takes really good care of the basketball. The amount of amazing passes, no look between the legs of defenders, spotting guys on each of the baselines when you think that there's a lot of heavy traffic in the middle. He's been everything as advertised. His defense is not really taking a step back. And it's, you know, it's funny because when you think of Chris Paul, you know, he's been the all defensive team all these years, but he doesn't, it's just kind of subtle. It's just right place, right time. I think he's such a student of the game. I can see him on the floor coaching like all the great point guards when I was growing up watching, whether it be Magic Johnson or John Stockton, doing those types of things. And I've just been blown away by how amazing he has been. I'm such a fan of his. You know, you're always a fan of him from afar, but there's always that mystique of, well, you know, Chris Paul never got to the Western Conference. And I don't think he thinks about that. I mean, he may, you know, occasionally, but I think he's here going, I'm in a right situation. I've got the court freedom because Mike D'Antoni gives it to me. I've got amazing scorers all over the floor, and I don't have to carry everything. I can go take a four-minute rest at the end of the first quarter and feel fresh before halftime. I can run the point with my second-tier group. I think sometimes even Chris looks, you know, as good, if not better, when he's got P.J. Tucker to throw to or Luke Bamute. That's the development of Chris Paul that I've seen, is that he not only is he not turned the ball over, he's got the great assist, the normal great defense. But, you know, remember that category in school, works well with others?
Yeah.
I think I'd give him an A-plus in that works well with others category.
Yeah, and to put it in context, courtesy of the NBA Stats Twitter account, Chris is the first player to have 70-plus assists and less than 10 turnovers in his first 7 games of a season since individual turnovers began being recorded, and that was during the 1977-78 season. So just a phenomenal start from an efficiency standpoint. I saw what you saw as well about his tentativeness last night shooting. I think it's because Saturday he was 2 of 12, Monday was 1 of 7. He had a couple of subpar games in a row, so I thought early on he was certainly focusing on the distribution. I thought things kind of changed for him in the fourth quarter, or I think it was late in the third, whenever it was. He had this one shot, it was like a 30-footer at the end of the shot clock, and I forgot the Pacers, one of their bigs was on him, just a shot that I couldn't believe that he made. And it seemed like once that went in, it felt like that all of a sudden it was one of those, okay, the basket's opening back up, and then you saw him start making a few more, taking and making a few more shots. And hopefully that's the silver lining if you want to start seeing him getting more involved as a scorer as they get on this road trip. Matt, two-part question.
Yeah, I just think it's good, yeah.
Yeah, two-part question here about James Harden. And this is obligatory. I asked Craig this last week. It's something you have to whenever you have a Rockets guy on. First, is this the best you've ever seen him play? Because 35-10 for a month, the Rockets went 12-1 as a team. That's just ridiculous. And second, what's your take on the MVP narrative? Because you see this all the time on Twitter, and I know you know my take both from Twitter and from the show with Craig last week. I think the pessimistic folks, I think it's a little bit overdone because I get the frustration, but at the same time, Stephen Curry 2 years ago, Russell Westbrook last year, or I guess Curry 3 years ago, both of those guys did have very compelling cases. And so I don't think it was necessarily anti-Harden so much as a combination of a little bit of aesthetics with James and the other guys being great. Whereas this year, not only is James, in my opinion, better than ever, I don't see any other guy in the association other than maybe LeBron James that can potentially have a legitimate narrative to win this thing. So curious your thoughts on, well, both of those angles, both Harden's true level of play and also your thoughts on his MVP chances.
I'll take the second part first. I think it's a team and race at this point. It's LeBron James and it's James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go back to your earlier point. I didn't begrudge Russell winning it. I didn't begrudge Steph Curry. I think it's too lazy to say, oh, he's getting screwed. Those other two gentlemen were very much deserving. Didn't mean that James wasn't, but somebody has to win. It's like when you go to the Academy Awards. There are five great movies out there, Ben. One of them's got to win. And I felt like James in that situation that he's been able to put out this, you know, masterpiece of a movie each of the last three seasons. And he's going to go against some very tough contenders. You know, will Antetokounmpo remain a candidate for an MVP? Will Ben Simmons get in the mix even though he's just a rookie because of his numbers the last few weeks? You know, LeBron's LeBron. I mean, LeBron can always be an MVP candidate, especially with what he's been able to do this year for the Cavaliers despite their record. But James is playing at a different level. I think having Chris with him, I think there's more confidence in teammates. I think his assist numbers continue to be very, very good. I'm not worried about the turnovers just because that's just sometimes who he's going to be.
Mm.
But the step back three is as deadly of a shot in the NBA as anybody that I've seen. And again, I'm watching 82 Rockets games as compared to watching 82 Warrior games. So maybe I'd have a different perspective, Ben, if I was watching Steph and Dwayne doing their every night. But that dribble, the top of the key, the top of the three-point arc, shot clocks at five, he takes that step to his left and drains a three-pointer, is about as deadly and as demoralizing as I see any team get when that shot goes through, and I've seen Ben that shot a whole lot so far this year.
Yep. Last couple of questions here for Matt Thomas, Rockets radio play-by-play guy on the road, home PA, hosted daily talk show 12-3 on Sports Talk 790 here in Houston. Matt, one of the new things at Toyota Center these days, and you've been at Toyota Center a lot the past week because it's been a four-game homestand, there's a new owner in Tillman Fertitta, and I know you may not deal with Tillman directly, but you deal with a lot of people who do. And it just seems to me, Matt, that there's a lot of, I would say, renewed energy in that place. And I'm certainly not meaning this as a slight to Les Alexander at all, because Les Alexander is a tremendous owner, the best that the city of Houston has ever had. But I'm curious, A, your thoughts, what limited you've seen from Tillman around the building, and secondly, do you buy that, I don't know, that this renewed energy that you're seeing a lot of places around the organization is, you know, contributing to what appears to be a special season in any small way?
Yeah, I don't know if it's directly to Tillman. It is interesting. We've seen more Tillman at the arena this year than maybe we've seen less in the last 5 years, and that's just because Les just hasn't chosen to live here full time. I think Tillman is a fan, first and foremost. Now he gets to have the ultimate toy of owning the operation. You know, and a little bit of questions I've asked around the organization, you know, that he's letting things kind of work as they normally would, because from a business perspective, it's one of the most profitable teams in the NBA. And from a player perspective, you've got James Harden locked up. You've got, you just signed Chris Paul. I mean, there wasn't like he had to come in here and change a whole lot of things. One of the things I think that makes Tillman such a fantastic business owner is he takes properties, whether it be restaurants or hotels or clubs, or, you know, and he sees that they're not performing up to expectations. He goes in there and fixes it right away. This will be maybe one of the first times in his life as an owner or of anything that he doesn't have to do that per se. So I think it's just very subtle. I don't think the Rockets' 17-4 start has much to do with the ownership change. I will tell you that I think the players like what they're hearing in terms of what's going to be coming up down the road. I think this whole practice facility thing is going to be a huge thing for this organization. I think the players like him. I think Daryl Morey is comfortable with his new owner, and that, you know, sometimes that could be some hesitation. So I think just Tillman right now is enjoying the fact that he's got the best seat in the house, and he's watching a basketball team that is doing well both on the business end and on the basketball side of things. So I like it. I mean, I've known Tillman for a long period of time, and it's always good to have a Cougar involved, and it's always good to have a local ownership too. I think that just goes to the overall confidence of, hey, we got a guy that not only owns this team and does want to make a profit and does want to run it as a business, but he ultimately has been a fan of this team for, you know, I'm sure all of his life. And so he's going to have a vested interest in making sure that it's as competitive as possible. And I always say the same thing about Les. It's just different because, you know, obviously Tillman lives here and Les did not.
Right. And certainly everything comes back to the fact that they're 17-4. If you're losing basketball games, you know, everything could be different. It's always easy to be a winner. It just seems to me like certainly the vibe, of course, it's not going to directly correlate in terms of the product on the floor, but it just seems like Toyota Center is a pretty happy place these days. And, you know, I'm sure there's just a little bit of excitement with the change. And, you know, I guess the true test will be, of course, time. And, you know, we'll see what he does when the team goes through their first tough patch. But certainly, so far, so good. A lot of people around the building seem to be excited about it. Matt, the last question for you. We let off talking about certainly where they are as we chat on this midday Thursday, 17-4, two games up on the Warriors with the tiebreaker at the moment. When is the point for you that you buy in that this team is a real threat to have the best record in the NBA? You mentioned the schedule earlier. That's certainly a fair counterpoint. You want to see how, you know, they've got San Antonio coming in next week. You've got the Thunder game on Christmas. Just curious, in your eyes, is it, you know, is it the turn of the year? Is it 40 games? Is it 60 games? What's the point where the sample size is large enough in your mind where you say, hey, the Rockets, in addition to being a really good team like we expected, this is a team that over 82 games could make a real run at getting home court advantage throughout the NBA playoffs?
My gut tells me, Ben, and I don't know anybody in Golden State, my gut tells me that they're going to have a very similar attitude that probably Cleveland had, is that they're not going to worry about whether or not they have the best record in the Western Conference.
Yeah, and I'll buy that, Matt. The counter to that, too, I would also say for Golden State, every game they play, it's like a Game 7 of the NBA Finals for the other team. That's how they're treated. So I think over 82 games, they might be a little artificially soft in terms of their record, which is another reason why I'm starting to think that that the number one seed might be doable for the Rockets. Anyway, sorry to cut you off. Go on.
No. So do I think this team can win 63 games this year? I think the answer to that is absolutely. So the question would be, if the 63 enough to have the number one seed in the Western Conference, especially, and again, I'm not saying that Golden State's not trying to win every game possible, but if you've been there, done that like they have, it would be only human to believe that you don't have to strive for the number one seed. You have one of the most difficult buildings to play in the NBA. You have won games on the road. You didn't lose very many postseason games, you know. So you add that, plus, and I want to make sure that I'm very clear on this, plus a better Rockets team that won 56 last year, I think the recipe says absolutely you should. So as far as the date is concerned, my guess would probably all start right before I'd really start contemplating it, because again, that will be, then the Rockets will have a pretty good test of the contenders that they will face in the Western Conference playoff by that time. Mm-hmm. We'll figure out if Golden State remains healthy. We'll figure out, frankly, Ben, if the Rockets stay healthy. So give me the All-Star break, and then we can seriously talk about the top seed. So I'd love for it to happen, because you know, you were talking about what has happened with the Rockets that gives you a different vibe of ownership. I think it's the city of Houston, at least the diehards that are saying, man, this has an eerie good feel of how the Astros play. Now, I don't think everybody's buying in. I think there's probably, you know, quite a few people that are saying, you know what, regular season, who cares? What are you going to do for me come playoff time? So you'll never change those people's opinion. But for someone that just experienced, as you did, this World Series run, it's like the good times roll. And I feel like that there has been more positive energy coming off of that than anything else. So you had that, plus Golden State's desire maybe not to worry about winning 68 games. You couple that together, plus, again, the Rockets continue to maintain their pace and they're a good, deep team and winning games, and James is playing at MVP level. It's a recipe for me to say that they very easily could be the number one team in the West.
Good take. And bonus final question and offspring off of that. I mentioned that Astros comparison last night, just their level of dominance, the way that even when it doesn't seem like they're playing at an A-plus level, they're able to get these 20-plus point wins the way they have on this homestand. It almost reminds me of the late May Astros in terms of starting to accept that, hey, this is a team that day in, day out is truly that dominant, has a real shot to do something special. And yeah, certainly coming right after the Astros winning the World Series less than a month ago, it's a pretty great time to be a Houston sports fan. To continue the Astros-Rockets analogy, I posed the question on Twitter last night. After the Astros were that dominant the first 2 months of the year, they would not have held that level of performance where they won 101 games without Mike Fiers, of all people, holding that team together through long stretches of June and July. If there had to be a Mike Fiers of the Rockets to keep this going over the next couple of months, if something should happen, who is your Mike Fiers Rockets candidate?
Well, if you're gonna use that analogy,
yes,
that would mean one of the heavy hitters would go down,
meaning
Chris and James for a period of time. So,
or we could even throw Capella.
I don't know if I want to answer this question or not. Do I have to answer this one?
We can throw Capella and the heavy hitters as well.
It would probably have to be Eric Gordon doing what he did when he was in the lineup with Chris Paul being out.
Yeah.
When he was, you know, averaging 23, 24 points per game.
So maybe we've already had the Mike Fiers thing happen.
Yeah, well, but you know what, though? But the problem with Mike Fiers, the analogy, is that you had multiple guys going down. If James goes down for 25 games, it's a different team, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but in this case, I'm going to say James is Altuve. We're not going to lose James. Knock on wood. Yeah.
Right.
But anyway, okay, we'll accept Eric Gordon as the Mike Fiers, although hopefully with a better late season and playoff performance than Mike Fiers, who, by the way, it sounds like could get traded today or tomorrow. We'll see what happens.
How about I give you an Astro? How about Luke Bahamute being the Marwin Gonzalez of the team?
Ooh, there you go. I like that. Because, yeah, you can plug.
Play multiple positions, hit the three, can rebound, good defensive player. Does everything you ask him to do, and he's you know, under compensation. He's not breaking the bank.
Yeah, and somehow both are about to get paid in the next year or two massively.
That's
yeah,
true. That's true.
I like that. Anyway, folks, that's Matt Thomas. Matt, before you go, plugs. Tell people, where, if they're not already following you on Twitter, where they can do so, how they can get blessed, how they can listen to your radio program every day. Throw out whatever plugs you want to throw out there.
All right. At SportsMT is my Twitter handle. My daily show is on Sports Talk 790 between noon and 3. And today at 2:30, and we will do this on a weekly basis starting this week, Mike D'Antoni will be with me for a half an hour. So today it's 2:30 until 3 for Mike D'Antoni. And then we'll put a schedule up on my Twitter account of upcoming Mike D'Antoni shows. So we'll have a chance to visit with the coach once a week for 30 minutes.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. Matt, thank you so much for the time. Safe travels to L.A. and look forward to hearing you on the call Sunday night for Rockets Lakers.
Thanks, Ben. Really appreciate it.
Sure thing. Thank you. That's Matt Thomas, again, host over at Sports Talk 790 here in Houston. Noon to 3 is his daily show, the Matt Thomas Show. Also, Rockets Road play-by-play guy and home PA announcer. Very busy guy, very well plugged in within the Rockets community, follows them on a daily basis. Thrilled to have him, as he said, break his Locked On Rockets virginity, get into the show for the first time because, yeah, he is a tremendous asset to the Houston sports community, and I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. Don't know how to sum it up better than Matt did. Quite frankly, you can't end the show any better than with a Luke Bahamute, Marwin Gonzalez analogy. So I'll end things right there. As always, thanks to you guys for listening. If you want to follow me or the show on Twitter, you can do so at Ben Dubose or at Locked On Rockets. You can also email the show, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, or you can subscribe to us on any of our podcast platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, wherever you listen to your podcasts, tune in. Just search for Locked On Rockets, and you can find us, subscribe to us, and leave us a 5-star review if you haven't already. Besides supporting our sponsors, leaving a quality review is about the best way that we can continue to remain viable to sponsors, and thus, since we have sponsors, that's how we're able to bring this to you on a daily basis, the only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. So that'll do it for today. That's Thursday, the first of three consecutive off days for the Rockets until they're back in action Sunday night in Los Angeles. That's not it for us, because here at Locked On Rockets, we are your host home for daily podcast coverage of the Rockets. So I think we'll have another interview lined up for you tomorrow. That's Friday. Then we'll take a couple of days off, getting back into basketball mode by the end of the weekend. So folks, enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Take care of whatever you need to do, since there's no basketball. If you haven't already tried out our Draft app, you should certainly do that. Draft app or draft.com. That's our sponsor from yesterday's program. Use that LO Rockets promo code and you can get free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. They've also got a $100 guarantee. So yeah, if you haven't tried Draft, that's our most recent sponsor. Certainly give them a try during these extended off days as well. But until then, enjoy whatever it is you do on your off days. We'll talk again tomorrow and then get geared up for the 3-game road trip for the Rockets, which starts Sunday night in Los Angeles. Until then, have a good one, folks, and thanks again for listening to me here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of your Houston Rockets.